Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Hurwitz's House of Horror. I'm your host, Steve Hurwitz, and this is the podcast where I sit down with some of my friends who may or may not watch a particular movie, horror in this case, and get to see what they think of it, whether they liked it or not. And yeah, it's just a nice kind of easy listening podcast we're going with.
Easy.
Well, joining me back in the House of Horror, we have Jeff Miller.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good, man. I hope you know that I'm slowly roping you into becoming my my co-host.
I'm just the eternal guest.
You're always going to be here. Yeah. You don't know it yet, but it's happening.
But I'm not going to think of questions. So.
That's fair. That's completely fair. And well, joining us for the very first time, we have Fernando Diaz. Welcome, friend.
Hello, everyone.
How are you doing, man?
Pretty good, man. I'm pumped to be here, honestly.
Oh, I'm glad
to hear. Excited to be part of this podcast.
Yeah. You're going to be moving away to Florida soon, so we kind of...
Goodbye.
Yeah, we kind of wanted to get you in before you left, so yeah. I didn't want to have to deal with that Zoom stuff, because this on its own is pretty terrible.
The audio quality should definitely be better this way.
It'll be way more fun, too.
Yeah, I'm having a great time right now.
Yeah, good. Since this is your first time joining us, I always like to ask people kind of what some of their first experiences are when it comes to horror, whether it's movies, shows, comics, books, anything that you remember. What are some of your first memories?
Okay, I would say my earliest memory would be with Nightmare on Elm Street. I remember I was a little kid, I don't know, maybe 8 years old. And my dad and maybe some of my uncles were watching Nightmare on Elm Street in the living room. And they told me to go to bed, told me not to come out, you know, not to watch the movie. Mm-hmm. And I remember sneaking into the living room. Behind the couch, peeking at the screen, I see this tongue sticking out between some fucking bars, just like just fucking wiggling around. And I freaked the fuck out and ran out of there. That was probably like my earliest memory of a horror story.
Man.
Yeah.
That's terrifying as a kid.
Oh, it was very terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like, I was very scared of horror movies. Like, I could not watch them for the longest time.
Well, that's funny you say that, because you're now kind of one of my go-to friends when it comes to like sitting down and watching anything scary or, you know, creepy, something horror related. And I'm pumped about it.
Yeah, I think the reason I got into it, because I'm a big fan of practical effects. And I think practical effects are huge in horror movies. I think they make it or break it. You know, if there's CGI in horror movies, I think it kind of takes you out of it.
It does.
But when there's practical effects, it fucking amplifies it.
Mm-hmm. I know that you've seen The Thing, and that's one of my favorite movies when it comes to practical effects.
That's one of mine, too.
And coincidentally, with The Thing, I guess the prequel, they used all CG for that. And that's kind of what ruined that movie. I don't think it's the worst movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not a bad plot, but...
it could have been better.
It could have been if they had just kept the practical effects, because they did it. And then they just, I think it was the studio didn't like it. So they just went over it with CG. And that's what ruined that movie for me.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I got another memory. There's this movie called... Okay. So I went to my aunt's house one day. And they ran into a movie. We were going to watch it. You know, it was like a family movie thing. And I was going to spend the day with them. And she thought we rented The Perfect Storm. Oh, no. The Perfect Storm. I think it's like a George Clooney movie. I'm not sure.
I think so.
Yeah. And it ended up being The Storm of the Century, which is a Stephen King book.
Oh.
And that movie was like a 4-hour long movie or some shit like that. And it was about like the devil showing up on a storm, like to an isolated island. And
that sounds awesome.
We watched the whole thing and
you're like sitting there waiting. Like, when's George Clooney going to show up?
Yeah. Like, I think maybe I was 13 years old or something like that. But yeah, that was like, this probably my second experience watching a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did they like that movie?
I think liked it. I remember all of us like being into it, you know? And then my mom, like, she was like, she was talking to my aunt. She's like, why would you let them watch that movie? Like, what are you doing? But we were into it.
Yeah.
I remember.
Well, so tonight we're actually recording a little late. It's this is Hurwitz's House of Horror Nights.
Ooh, late night.
Yeah.
Late night fright.
We had a fun little incident where the co-host here, Jeff, was unfortunately not able to watch the movie on the night we were supposed to record.
But he still showed up.
He did, yeah.
I was here. I still showed up for the record. I just didn't watch the movie.
We had a funny conversation of if we were going to record, and if we were... Were we going to have Jeff just kind of pretend that he had watched it and just, you know, kind of gone along with it or taken guesses as to what had happened? Or we might have gone through it as him just not knowing and just kind of seeing what we thought about it and kind of any of his input on it. But conveniently at one of our local theaters, the Crest Theater, shout out. That place is great. They were showing it. Was it 3 days after.
Mm-hmm.
And so that conveniently gave Jeff the perfect opportunity to go, and Fernando went along, and he was able to get
it. It was actually pretty perfect because, like, I'm leaving soon, and I, you, earlier you asked me a question, is like, what am I going to miss from Sacramento?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized while I was there, I was like, I'm going to miss a Crest Theater. Like, and especially because you gave me some really good moments there.
Oh, most definitely.
Escape from New York.
Mm-hmm.
The Ramones movie. What was that?
Rock and Roll High School.
Rock and Roll High School, yeah.
Well, speaking of horror like that, where they used to have the, what was it called? There was that kind of festival during the summer.
Trash Film Orgy?
Trash Film Orgy. That's what it was.
I missed that.
And yeah, it was like every Saturday at midnight, they would play, you know, a different kind of horror or kind of cult movie. I think for maybe 5 or 6 weeks. And that's, I think, when I took you to see Rock and Roll High School, Escape from New York, all those fun
what
ones.
What else did we watch there?
I know Jeff and I once snuck into the very end when they were playing heavy metal. Remember, it was like that animated movie.
Oh, I've always wanted to watch that.
It was weird.
Yeah. It was even weirder. From what I remember, we were stoned, I was really high, and that was such a weird movie to walk into, especially like just the ending.
Because like the scene we came into, I believe somebody was riding a pterodactyl.
Yeah, I think she was like in a, maybe this might be just be my brain, but a chainmail bikini riding a pterodactyl.
That sounds
through the desert or something.
I believe that is on the cover. Yeah.
That's the so perfect.
Yeah,
yeah. So that was fun, but yeah, like I'm really glad that tonight they were playing that movie. So yeah. Jeff, you were able to watch that and
good time.
Yeah, it was fun.
Fern, you were saying you had to watch it like on your phone because again you're moving away and you've kind of like given your TV or you've set your TV.
Yeah, no TV. I got a baby in the house, so got to make sure I have headphones on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then this way you were able to literally see it on the big screen.
And I got to say, I enjoyed it more on the big screen, I think.
I bet.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it more. I feel like I always enjoy movies more the second time I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Like even if I hated the movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes I like have a better appreciation.
Yeah.
Because there was something I watched, I don't know, months and months ago. Oh, it was the first time I saw War of the Worlds, the Tom Cruise one.
Okay, that one I think I liked better the first time. I remember the first time I watched that movie, I fucking loved it. And the second time I was like, eh, whatever.
For me, like I saw it in theaters and I despise it. I was like, this is terrible. I hate this. And then it was during the COVID lockdown. I was just watching everything I possibly could. And I put that one on. I was like, you know what? This movie is not that bad. This is pretty good.
It was okay. Yeah. Well, what was the name of the actor? Who's the kid? Who's his son?
He was Goku in Dragon Ball Z Evolution.
Right.
It was the actor Goku.
Goku. That Goku role probably killed his career, I think.
Yeah.
What the fuck is he? Oh, he wasn't actually in the show. Shameless, right?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, he's in Shameless.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to bring us to tonight's movie, Event Horizon.
Starring Sam Neill,
boom, boom, boom. Lawrence Fishburne,
gong gong gong,
other people,
Draco Malfoy. What's his name? Draco Malfoy.
Draco Malfoy's dad. The president or fucking emperor or whatever the fuck he was from V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
What was he?
The prime minister.
Prime minister,
maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's what they use over there. Huh?
Yeah. Over all those weirdos over there.
Yeah. In the UK.
That's what they use.
Yeah. spoiler alert. If you haven't seen this movie, we're diving straight into it like we have with all the other movies. So here's your warning. You can take it or leave it, I guess. Whatever. So Event Horizon came out in 1997. And this movie was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who has also directed many popular movies, such as the 1995 movie Mortal Kombat. He directed Resident Evil. He directed a chunk of the Resident Evils, I believe.
From what I was looking at, it was most of them. I think he might have produced some of them, though. I'm not sure.
And he directed AVP.
Who is the director who directed Licorice Pizza?
That would be
Paul Anderson.
Yeah. No, not the same Paul Anderson, though.
No, but this
right,
is Paul
but
W.
That totally
is,
threw me off.
This is Paul W.S. Anderson.
Because I saw that and I was like, no way. There's no way that's the same guy. And I was like, man, this movie's about to be interesting. Like indie space horror or something. And then, yeah, definitely that wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm.
Can I start by saying a fun fact?
Please.
He was also supposed to direct the X-Men movie.
That's right.
But he chose to do this movie, Event Horizon, instead.
Mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. I'm not sure.
I would love to see a Paul W. Anderson X-Men movie.
I'd be okay without it. I don't want. I thought Bryan Singer did a you know, good job.
Yeah, I don't want it instead, mm-hmm. but I'd just be so curious to see.
You know? Oh, yeah. Just multiverse, like an alternate shit. Universe. Yeah. It's like, oh, he directed this.
I'll see all the movies, multiverse, like whatever. What if, you know?
I mean, how interesting would it have been to have kind of seen like an X-Men movie, but like with a horror spin as opposed to.
That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, like kind of what the New Mutants was trying to do, but then just was not good.
I've honestly never seen any of the Resident Evil movies.
Really?
Yeah.
The first one, I think, is pretty. It's a pretty solid, like fun kind of horror action film.
Yeah.
Then they just kind of get all over the shop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I could take them or leave them.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're better than like the newest one that came out recently. I kind of enjoyed that, but for like dumb reasons.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great movie.
It's more like,
but it was more video game accurate, for sure. Mm-hmm.
I like how it's very clearly a different vibe when there's someone in the room who also likes horror movies instead of like, hey, so we watched this movie and I'm like, yeah, it sucked. Boo.
I mean, you were very positive about the first Friday the 13th.
True. And all downhill from there.
You know, I haven't seen that movie either. You know, Steve, I think, you were the one that usually got me into watching these horror movies and stuff like that. I never watch horror movies on my own.
Really. Yeah, that's true. I felt like you were open every time. I'd be like, hey, you want to watch this movie? We used to have our Wine Wednesdays. So we would sit down and we just put on mostly horror movies.
Just vomit.
Yeah. Well, one of us would. All right. So the movie starts off with text saying in the year 2040, the deep research vessel Event Horizon launched to explore boundaries of the solar system. Then it disappeared without a trace beyond the eighth planet, Neptune. It was considered the worst space disaster on record. Now we're shown the year 2047. The first thing I noticed, it was just a really bad CG just floating around right in our face.
That first asteroid that was coming by us was pretty bad.
Yeah.
I noticed, especially in the big screen as opposed to my phone.
But, you know, it's a product of its time. It wasn't the worst thing.
Product of its time. I got a little fact, though, like that first shot.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not the first shot. One of the first shots where Sam Neill wakes up, you know, and he's like in the space station. Mm-hmm. And he pans out in that. Like kind of like the first stationary, like orbital, like station of Earth or whatever. So apparently the CGI crew, like a majority of the CGI budget was spent on that shot alone.
Damn.
And it took the crew like 10 months to make. And it was like a 30 second clip. And I thought it actually looked pretty good, huh?
Yeah. For its time. It held up.
For it sure. fucking looked better than that asteroid.
That one, like that, that one shot in particular, even though it didn't even last that long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is it worth like a majority of the budget? I don't know.
I mean, we're talking about it.
You think? Yeah. Well, that's true. So now you think the ship is was that a model? You think?
No.
I think so.
It really? Looked more real. I think it was a model than the other stuff. That's for sure.
I think it was a model, especially when it was blowing up. It looked like a fucking model.
It gave me like TNG vibes, like Star Trek vibes. It like pans past the ship and it was like this seems kind of like a model.
Yeah.
Not to jump ahead, but you had mentioned during the movie, I was like, dang, those set pieces are
pretty fucking sick in that movie. Yeah. Like especially this time around, I was paying attention to all of them after like reading some trivia and shit. Mm-hmm. I was paying attention to the set pieces and they're all fucking really good. Like that scene where Lawrence Fishburne, we're fucking jumping way ahead here.
Yeah, that's okay.
That scene where Lawrence Fishburne is running down the hallway setting up those bombs.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, they could only film it from like one angle.
Because, really?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Because like the camera crew has like a lot of trouble like getting like around in that.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But I mean.
Really impressive.
Those set pieces are fucking dope.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
I think we were talking about this earlier, how it has like that kind of gritty, like sci-fi feel.
It was it's the dirty sci-fi.
The dirty sci-fi, like how Alien
is. Like Alien was. Yeah, I love that kind
like,
of setting.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, I love that shit too. And like I said today, like I was paying more attention to that, watching it in the theater. And a lot of the seats are like duct tape and shit like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, is this fucking ship's been through some shit. You know, it's a Lewis and Clark. It's been like, you know. It's like fucking.
It's like it's clearly been. Back. It's seen some shit.
Yeah, yeah it's
like
frontier. You know,
it's a developed ship. Yeah. Like you know, it has its own personality there. Mm-hmm.
But the only thing, I like the dirty sci-fi. I almost feel like it leaned too far, the design of it to like you had mentioned earlier before we actually watched the movie. Ah, damn, Hellraiser.
It was inspired by Hellraiser.
That's why my Hellraiser shirt.
We're representing right there.
Yeah, just like everything was black metal, and I don't know. So it reminded me of a death metal.
I feel like that was kind of a lot of like movies in like the mid 90s, late 90s, yeah, right, you know, right. They just kind of had a dirty, grungy feel to them.
Prodigy playing at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very like Matrix feel almost too. Yeah, uh-huh. It is that you're right.
What came first? That or Matrix?
Event Horizon or Matrix? Event Horizon, because that was 95. No, excuse me. That was 97. Matrix was 99.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So close.
Yeah.
Well, let's take it back for a second there. Yeah. Going back to the beginning of the movie, we're introduced to Sam Neill, our main character. And I got to say, I love seeing Sam Neill.
Because I love Sam Neill.
I think just from Jurassic Park, like I see him, I'm like, he's the hero. He's the good guy.
Yeah, I like Sam Neill. But I feel like his acting is okay in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked seeing him like, whoa, Sam Neill. And then through the movie, it was kind of like, oh, Sam Neill.
I feel like I think I kind of agree.
Lawrence Fishburne shines.
Oh, most definitely.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of, the very first time I watched this, because I've seen this movie a handful of times, you know, this is the first guy I meet. You think he's going to be our protagonist. Later on, though, we get the switch.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his acting was good for this movie because it's a corny sci-fi movie. And he kind of like, he was chewing up the scenery in kind of a bit over the top, but still just like he wasn't taking it seriously.
I think for me, it was more of the scenes where he's trying to be sad or emotional, like when his wife, like, you know, when it flashed back to his wife, like killing herself, like him crying and like and stuff like that. I didn't buy it.
That's fair. You know, kind of rewatching that again. I'm like, all right. Yeah. Just get crazy.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, never
mind. Well, so yeah, we meet Sam Neill, his character, Dr. Weir. He gets a transmission saying that the Lois and Clark received a transmission. It's a top secret type deal. And he has to go meet up with the crew.
more like what's the scientist's name again?
Dr. Weird.
More like Dr. Weird. Am I right? Fucking idiot.
Yeah, with the bug ripping out your eyeballs. And
yeah, ew, gross. Also, quick shout out to Lois and Clark.
The new adventures Lois of Superman. And Clark. I love that ship. Lois and Clark is a good ship. I don't think you got it. You said Lois and Clark.
Yeah. I wanted
did
to
say Lois.
You said Lois. Like, shout out to Superman, but I.
Damn, you should have. My bad.
I couldn't think of the title fast enough.
Ah, fuck. No, that's saying it. I'm not fixing that.
Yeah, whatever.
Leave it. Leave this part in there.
I'm sure. Like, I think I'm going to say like Lewis and Clark Morris. Lewis. Just correct
you
me.
You already have a couple times.
Yeah.
Just correct me. Like,
yeah, I think it was just fucking... that one time that you fucked up.
This is when we're introduced to Miller, Lawrence Fishburne. Also, just real quick, Jeff and I have only watched the first three Friday the 13th movies, and the only biggest, like the biggest name in that is only going to be
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon. So like watching this, I'm like, oh, wow, there's
Kevin Bacon's in that.
Yeah, the very first one.
Shit, I haven't seen any of this.
But it was just interesting seeing kind of like known actors. Now I'm like, oh, wow, look at these guys. I kind of forgot they're in this movie, like Lawrence Fishburne, who, again, is fantastic. So he's Miller, the captain. We have Stark. She's the XO. We have Smith. He will be the pilot. He also played Alfred in the Gotham series.
Oh, that's right.
That's where I've seen him.
Yeah.
So then we're going to have Justin. I just kind of have his name as Baby Bear. I think he was referred to a few times.
Yeah. Oh, that's it.
Baby Bear and Mama Bear.
That's right. We have Cooper, who I liked his introduction. I think Lawrence Fishburne said, like, he's a funky spaceman. What do you actually do here?
Everything. He was kicking ass. Yeah. He's fucking Iron Man. Yeah.
Favorite character.
And he was the rescue technician. Then we have DJ, Jason Isaacs, who I was just rewatching Star Trek Discovery, is the main villain.
Oh,
in
he's
that.
In that?
Yeah,
oh.
He's fucking rad.
He's
in that.
Cool. Yeah.
He's great.
And yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Was he who you guys were talking about with Draco Malfoy's
dad? Yeah, it's Draco Malfoy's dad.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. I never realized that.
With a long blonde wig.
That's probably why.
He's also in the show Awake. If anyone out there has seen that show,
so me,
what's it about?
It's about a guy who
is he awake?
Yeah, or just, is he?
I don't know. Ooh. Oh, is that really what it's about?
That's a twist.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, his family dies.
Oh, I think you told me about this. Yeah. Like in one life, his family is alive, but when he's sleeping, his family's dead, or vice versa.
Yeah, like his wife is dead in one, and then he goes to sleep and wakes up, and then his kid's dead instead, and then it trades back and forth. Whoa.
So after meeting the crew, they end up going into a cryo sleep or some sort of weird water cryo sleep.
Yeah, it's like a cryo sleep.
Yeah. Dr. Weir, Sam Neill, has a fucking weird ass dream where he wakes up and he's kind of walking along the the Lewis and Clark. My bad. The Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, you went through that with like without even flinching, huh? Yeah. Like it was not like it was called Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
Lois and Clark.
Again, Superman has ruined that name for me.
Yeah.
So he it ends up just being a dream, and he sees his wife sitting in like the captain's chair, and she has no eyes. Fucking weird.
Also, she's naked.
This is true.
Is she naked in that scene?
Yep. 100%. I was very confused.
He walks around and turns the chair, and I was like, oh my God, there's a nipple. And then she had her eyes in that scene, right?
No.
Oh, and she didn't have her eyes.
They were closed. Yeah, they were, and then she appears like behind him.
Blood red.
And then her eyes. Yeah.
And she's like, forever or something like that.
Said some shit. Yeah. I remember you were like in the movie theater, you whispered to me, you're like, oh, that would suck. Like, because you thought he was actually awake before everybody else.
Oh, right. Yeah. Him waking up, like, what a nightmare. Honestly, more than anything, probably in that whole movie, being in cryosleep and waking up in a vat of goo or water, whatever that is, and everyone else is still out. And you, if you're just stuck in there, what do you just drown? Or do you like just breathe until you fall asleep at some point? That's terrifying.
It's like waking up early at a slumber party.
Yeah.
You know, you had nothing to do. Like, you don't want to wake anybody else up. It's not your house. It's all gone. Yeah.
Now we have phones, at least that can keep us occupied.
But right? Not back then. You just got to twiddle your thumbs. You tell everybody wakes up.
Not me. I ran home.
Fuck this place. And now, like Justin Cassidy, you just play Guitar Hero until everybody wakes up.
I was going to say, actually, if I knew like where the TV room was, there's like a separate TV room, I'd just sneak down and go play video games.
Yeah, you guys are smart. Yeah, you guys are smart about it. I would just lay there.
I'd cry and run home.
Well, that's when Weir wakes up from this dream, and it turns out they've been in this cryo sleep for about 56 days. This is when we end up meeting the whole cast that we just went through. They're asking Dr. Weir, like, what are they doing out there? Because they were on leave and now they're pulled off of that for this. So we find out that the events documented about the Event Horizon were slightly false. Weir had created some sort of device or some sort of engine capable of faster than light travel.
And they say that's not possible. Laws of physics do not allow that.
Spot on. Apparently it has. He kind of explains it by putting a piece of paper, putting a pencil through it, which I think they end up doing in, I don't know.
Interstellar.
That's right.
Yeah. Fun fact about that too. That's, I think, where they got it from. They explained it exactly the same way. Folding a piece of paper, piercing pen through the middle.
They ask, what's the fastest route from one end to the other? Mm-hmm. Straight line? Nope. It's by bending and folding and passing through. Mm-hmm. Oh, I like this. It had one of those classic, speak English to me. I don't understand. I haven't heard that shit in so long.
Yeah, me neither.
English, please.
Stop speaking scientist to me.
Yeah, he's like, layman's terms, try English or something like that.
Yeah.
I like that they kept calling Lawrence Fishburne.
Skipper.
Yeah, I like how they called him Skipper.
You know, I didn't.
Through the first half.
I didn't hear that until like I was replaying Mass Effect 1. And Ashley, one of the characters in the game, was
calling
him Skipper. And I was like, I've never heard that before. Like, really? I don't know why I've never heard that before. Like, I'm sure I have. Maybe I just...
Is it like an outdated term now?
I don't know.
Maybe. Well, I mean, they're using it in Mass Effect, so maybe it isn't.
Mass Effect. Yeah.
I was thinking maybe it was like a throwback. Future. Like, well, in the future, they use old terms.
Yeah. No, maybe. So it's called a gravity drive. That's that
gravity drive.
Captains.
Yeah. apparently, a transmission was received from the Event Horizon, which again disappeared 8 years ago. Whoop. Disappeared 7 years ago. It ends up kind of being like this weird garble, just like, blah, 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 blah. But you know, more garbled.
And like,
Fishburne's like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, that was scary, dude.
Yeah.
Who was it? It's going to be DJ. Of course, he's the only one who can hear something in it. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's going to be Latin.
Can I just say DJ reminded me of the android, what was his name?
From
Prometheus.
Oh, Fassbender?
Fassbender, Michael Fassbender. Reminded me of the Fassbender android.
I can definitely see
that.
Yeah,
a little bit. I was thinking that too. I was kind of like, is this dude going to have like milk blood or whatever? Is he going to be a robot? And I was like, I don't know, wrong movie.
Yeah, not the Alien franchise.
Yeah.
So yeah, the words that he ends up kind of hearing is Liberté May, which translates to roughly to save me.
Somebody save me.
I'm trying so hard
not
to sing
songs. I don't care how you do it. Just save. Come on.
I think I'm going to use that as the new opening for this for the podcast. So this is when, you know, they finally get close to the event horizon. They end up having a very rough time kind of finding it. They're like going through the clouds and everything's shaking. Everyone's freaking out.
Yeah, space storm.
Yeah. And Lawrence Fishburne is sitting in that super cool chair. I love that chair.
Yeah, chair's cool with fucking 360.
It
yeah.
made me laugh.
Me too, actually.
Yeah.
He was always kind of like, floating around. Yeah, he's in the background. I was like, God, what are you doing back there?
He's like, everyone's at your stations. Everyone yeah. like ran off and he's like, me.
Slowly swivels around.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like a really futuristic computer gaming chair.
Yeah, yeah, I can totally.
See nerds just fucking sitting in that
Not
shit.
Very sturdy, though.
No.
Yeah, kind of like, kind of wiggled and wobbled around.
A little wiggly.
So they make it through the storm and the event horizon right there in our face. And did you say like that's the scene you think might have been a model?
I think the event horizon was a model. I think a lot of the, I think the ships were models for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they looked really good. And, yeah. and you know, a lot of the CG sometimes like doesn't like the asteroid and shit like that. You know,
the
that
asteroids was, and just like
and like even like the paper cup and like a fucking book flying around like that shit looked like not that well, yeah. great.
I was gonna say like
the
that's,
ships and everything look really good because yeah. again practical effects
makes the biggest difference.
Yeah, I've heard sometimes. Like especially early on CG, it was really hard not to make things look shiny mm-hmm. for whatever reason. I don't remember something about rendering or something or computer power. So every time I see something that's like yeah a ship that's really like. Detailed and kind of like a matte cool color, it's always like, oh, I bet that's a model because yes. it would have looked kind of shiny and hokey if it was CG in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought all those scenes looked really good and everything. Yeah. Another fun fact, I think I was looking at it this time, but I didn't see it. Like, I gotta Google an image of that shit. But apparently, there's a X-wing on one of the antenna arrays on the event horizon.
What?
Like oh a yeah, model of the
X-wing. So I didn't see it this time. I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
Man, see, like, kind of wish I'd been there to rewatch this movie with you guys so I could look out for little things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a cool guy at work, so.
Cool.
Very cool.
Making money.
Make the money. You brought us home pizza.
Yes. Yeah, thanks, dude.
You're welcome. You gave me beer.
Yep.
And then you're giving me your company, Fernando.
Yes.
Oh.
Thank you.
You won't have it for long?
Oh. Well, so, you know, they managed to find the event horizon. They dock with it. And they end up boarding the ship. This is kind of going back to that CG. It just looks kind of very, very 90s. You know, the book floating around, the coffee cup. Mm-hmm. I feel like this was the time when CG was becoming kind of like a thing in movies. Yeah. And everyone was just using it because they could.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't thinking, should we? Or could we? You know, something like that.
But I also feel like during this time, it was probably very expensive. It was probably very time consuming. So they used it like sparingly more, I feel like.
I don't know how true this is, but I heard why people were using CG so much was because practical effects are now more expensive.
Mm. Yeah.
Like that, maybe that, yeah, during this.
Especially during this time as
right.
well.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right.
That transition.
Mm. Yeah.
So we have Lawrence Fishburne's character. We have Miller. Miller, Baby Bear, Justin, I think was his name, and Peters. So those are the three that end up boarding the ship. Justin ends up going to the engine. Then you have Miller going to the medical bay, and Peters goes off somewhere. I don't really remember.
The
I think she goes to the bridge.
Yeah, the bridge.
The bridge, that's right, that's right. So all three of them separate. This is, you know, perfect.
Classic horror.
Exactly. We follow Lawrence. We follow Miller first. We see him kind of exploring around. He's like, there's no life detected. And then a fucking glove comes floating around and scares the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck me.
I like that scene. Cooper's like, oh, Skipper's got the willies.
Then we go to Justin. He's sees that huge door that leads to engineering. He opens it up. And I believe he describes it as a meat grinder. Mm. That thing is terrifying.
Again, yeah, going back to the like the set design, like mm-hmm.
totally.
That shit's fucking hand built. That shit's fucking.
Oh, it looks great.
Looks good. Looks cool.
Yeah, the whole hallway, like all the walls are rotate. It's like rotating spikes.
Yeah,
that was scary.
It reminds me of just like a much scarier version of, you know, kind of one of those tunnels you'd go down in a funhouse.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
With the spinning tubes.
Mm-hmm. So Justin, you know, he finally gets through that meat grinder and he ends up seeing the gravity drive. It's in a huge circular chamber and it has three floating pieces around it. And then there's kind of one ball in the center. I noticed that there are just spikes sticking out of these walls, and it's super dangerous looking.
Totally.
Right? What's up with those spikes?
I don't know, man.
That's what I was thinking the whole time.
Yeah.
I was like, this seems like a torture chamber.
Yeah. Especially that core, too. It's all like, it looked a lot like from Hellraiser. From Hellraiser.
Yeah.
But, I mean.
Well, I mean, yeah, I got so many sinister. Hellraiser just kind of tones from this. Again, the whole, you're going to another dimension or another world that's ruled by hell things. It's awesome. That's, I think, another reason why I kind of just really like this movie as well.
That's what's funny, because that's one of the reasons I don't like this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff wanted to.
That was the first thing I said, I think, after the
movie. More of an interdimensional, like,
yeah, like psychological horror, where it's like, I like the idea of them all losing their minds, but the fact that it's like, oh, evil, we went to hell and torture. I was like, yeah, it seems silly.
Well, again, it's not necessarily hell. It's a hellish dimension.
Right.
Yeah.
Just a dimension where everyone's wrapped in barbed wire for some reason.
Then we end up going to Peters, who is exploring the bridge. Thank you for that. And you kind of see this weird, just like red, like fucking red moss or red gross shit kind of all over the inside of the hole.
A body floating around.
Yeah, that's right. And like its eyes, I think they said like it looked like they either
been had clawed been, out.
Yeah, they said it looked like they'd been blown out. And then somebody said, nah.
Yeah, no, well, he's like, yeah, there's no way that's decompression.
Yeah.
He's like something or someone clawed them out.
Yeah, and she had a name for it, which I really liked, but I can't remember what it was now. Something about it being a frozen corpse.
Oh, frozen human popsicle, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It was funny.
Human sickle,
some shit like that. Yeah,
nailed it.
Yeah,
I'm making that up.
I liked when it dropped and it was just like,
oh, explodes.
That was tight.
Yeah, and the hand was
just like sliding on the ground. Around.
I like that all of the, you know, it's the year 2047 and all.
Oh,
of
I remember.
The logs
sorry,
are on CDs.
Everyone. Everyone. Corpsicle.
Okay, that's what it was.
Sorry, Steve. Yep.
No, that was worth it. No, I'm done.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. No, just I like that, you know, it's the year 2047 and everything is still on CDs.
Yeah. That's what we were like. You still using CDs? Yeah. 2047?
She was just grabbing them with her gloves. I was like,
you're
probably
ruined.
Yeah.
It's super important data. She's like, let me just.
She's like, yank it out. I'm
forcing it out.
Yeah, that shit's fucked.
Well, maybe history repeats itself, you know? Right? Vinyl's coming back.
Yeah, CDs are going to come back. You know, like, retro secure. Version of fucking securing data? CDs.
Yep.
CDs is most secure. Yep.
Obviously.
Just don't scratch them or break them or
breathe on them
too hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Always turn it upside down. Mm-hmm. So that way, you know, the data part is facing up.
Right.
Yeah.
Future tech.
Beautiful. So we end up going back to Justin now, and he's looking at the gravity drive. At first, everything was spinning, but then everything kind of stops. And it all lines up and like kind of like you see just blackness and he's staring straight into it. And of course, like everybody should, whenever something like this happens, he goes up and just starts touching it.
Yeah, I was looking over at Fernando at that part. Like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
And CGI like terrible on that shit, too. Mm-hmm. He's like, ooh. Like a little black ooze.
It was like,
that's
another example of how like too shiny, you know?
But yeah, you know, why would he touch that? Yeah. Like he's an engineer, like he should know.
He should know better. Yeah.
You know?
But maybe it's because like, you know, it's a force, something's driving him to do this.
Maybe
right. You know? Later on I was kind of like, okay. Yeah. It seems like it's kind of like
that whole ship is
we learned that it's alive. The ship is alive, and that's kind of what ends up driving everyone nuts. So I guess that's an excuse for touching
something.
Right,
I guess.
You know, sorry, I just have this idea in my head.
Let's have it.
That we were talking about future, you know, CDs and shit like that. And it's like, oh, that's the future, 24/7. We're using a fucking virtual reality headset as a fucking, like, stand for the microphone. I was just looking down, like, this is the future.
We're living in it.
But
this is the real future.
Yeah, not even, like, yeah, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not as glamorous, kind of.
Right. And then that portal opens up and Teal'c walks out and he's like, welcome to Stargate. Remember that part?
Indeed.
I don't know.
That's his catchphrase.
What the fuck is Teal'c?
Teal'c? It's from Stargate.
Oh.
Yeah, because there's an event horizon. That's what they step through the Stargate.
That's what it's called, Event Horizon?
Yep, the little I guess, portal.
Yeah,
a wormhole. Okay. Excuse me. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's shimmer. Oh, actually.
The one thing you got.
Look over there, here. Right here.
That thing over there.
I have a coaster.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And that kind of blue part is the event horizon that they walk through.
Yeah.
There you go.
Dope. Thank you. So as soon as he touches it, he gets sucked right into this wormhole or in this black hole. And there's just a lot of what the fuck is going on? And this is what ends up causing some sort of gravity, or not gravity, like an energy explosion that ends up just wrecking shop kind of through the event horizon. And it ends up affecting the Lewis and Clark.
That's right.
Lewis and Clark.
Sets everything on fire. Everything's blowing up and shattering.
So you think the entity or whatever the fuck it was that affected the crew, was that around before that shockwave, or was that because of the shockwave?
That's a really good question.
Right, like if they didn't go to the ship.
He would have never gotten sucked into that thing, would they have been okay?
I have no idea. Maybe
I would say because the previous crew did all, they were affected by whatever.
But I guess it wasn't until they
all transported there.
They opened the fucking thing.
And they all went there.
But I guess like since we learned that the ship is alive, it comes back. So it's already kind of affecting their minds. So whether or not, I guess he had touched it, I'm sure the ship would have somehow
managed to affect the crew.
Yeah. And this maybe just expedited it. Someone
eventually would have fucking gotten sucked in there.
Yeah. And I guess,
that's a good point, though. I wonder, yeah.
Because it's a shockwave thing. That's the whole thing. I was like,
it seemed
to spread. Maybe it was just doing that to fuck up the Lewis and Clark.
I was going
to
say that's the reason why they had to abandon
them there.
Yeah, because like the life support systems were down and, the crew has to abandon the Lewis and Clark.
And
now they're
horizon.
All on the event horizon.
They're drawing them in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I was reading that the movie was pitched as a haunted house in space.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I like that
a lot too. Yeah. And it's really, it does make sense. And later on in the movie, like you see the blood come in through, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that thing, and it spills out like The Shining.
Yeah.
That scene was Shining.
Cool. That was
100%.
But that's what that reminded me of.
So yeah, this is when we learned, I guess, it is a black hole that they're creating to go from one side of the universe to another. And then during that time, just travel through hell for 7 years. So everyone has now had to abandon the Lois and Clark. Did I say that right?
Yeah, let's keep it Lois and Clark.
The Lewis and Clark. God damn. That's difficult for me to say.
All the Superman talk going around here.
So yeah, everyone has to abandon ship and they're now on the event horizon. We have Peters. She's kind of like investigating the logs, trying to decipher, what she can off of this disc that she has ruined by grabbing and rubbing with her glove. This is when, shit starts to get weird. I guess even more weird because she sees visions of her son and it's like his legs all covered in weird boils and shit. And she's like,
look like you'd see his bones.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah, it was very creepy.
It was very cool.
That was the first scene that was like creepy.
Yeah. Then we go to Dr. Weir, who is investigating the core because, it's his baby. And he ends up having just such a bad time because he sees more images of his dead wife without any eyes, which seems to be the theme, just people without eyes. And this is kind of when...
Because where we're going, you don't need eyes to see.
There we go.
Nice.
That reminded me of Back to the Future as well. I'm like, where we're going, we don't need roads.
That's what the line reminds me of. That's why I wanted to laugh when I heard that line.
Yeah, this is when Stark comes to the conclusion that the ship is alive. It's starting to affect their mental capabilities and just everything around them is starting to go wrong. They're hanging out in the cockpit again, or the piloting area. Or the bridge, excuse me, that took me too long to get to. And the bridge, and like fucking shit starts like banging on the walls and all that. And that's when, Weir's like, fucking, let's open that shit. Something's up with him now.
Weir's. Yeah, he's like, oh, something crazy is trying to get in. Let's go let it in. It's like, oh, I don't like that guy.
Hey guys, Dr. Weir, more like Dr. Weird.
He's so weird.
Yeah.
Got him. After that happens, we have Justin waking up from... Oh, they managed to pull Justin out. I missed that part, which you mentioned earlier, Fern, is that Cooper starts freaking out and Cooper fucking saves Justin's life by flying through fucking space and shit, and he pulls him out.
Yeah. I love Cooper for that. He was always like gung-ho, like, oh, I gotta go. Yeah. Like, he's always like, okay, I'm up. Yeah. Like, he fucking jumps in there.
He was ready
Cooper's
for everything.
Cooper's badass.
Yeah. I already said.
Is he anything else? So that actor, is he?
I don't remember that actor.
I've never seen him in anything.
We can.
But he was great, yeah.
I'll look that up.
Let me use the internet. Cooper. Event Horizon.
Like, he was always like, I'm gonna jump in there. Like, when they're all outside fixing the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then Justin, again, tries to, like, am I jumping
out? Oh, no, actually, this is the exact part we were at. I was gonna say Justin wakes up from, like, after he gets pulled from the black hole. Yeah. And he's, like, in this weird, just kind of, like, catatonic state.
Yeah, and he's about to shoot himself out of the airlock.
Yeah, he fucking just wanders in there.
Yeah,
and
he's
then,
about to shoot. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's possessed. He, like, mm-hmm. he says some lines.
He says some shit.
Yeah, I think I got it written down here. He says, if you'd seen what I had, you wouldn't stop me. And, like, everyone's kind of banging on the airlock. Yeah. Like, don't what are you doing?
It. Yeah, just, Cooper at that point, what I was going to say was, like, he's like, all right, I got it. He's like, I'm going to go. And then Lawrence Fishburne's like, you stay where you're at. Yeah, I got this.
Because he's like, I know you can fix this ship. Yeah. We're trying to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
I got this.
Lawrence Fishburne, as a captain, was fucking like a dope casting.
Oh, most
like,
definitely.
He was so good. Yeah, I guess he was captain of the Nezebenezia, what the fuck, what, right? The
Matrix Nebuchadnezzar.
Ship? Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah.
So he's just made to be a captain.
He's I got this down by now. And again, that came out 2 years later, 1999.
Yeah, second time Matrix has come up.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence Fishburne, I mean.
How Orpheus. Could it not? Yeah.
Any word on this actor who played Cooper?
Yeah, he was in like one episode of a lot of shows, like Grey's Anatomy and Bones and CSI and stuff.
I wonder if that has to do because this movie bombed.
It did. It did not do well.
$60 million budget. You can tell by the fucking stats because they're fucking dope. And 27 million revenue.
Damn.
Yeah, so it lost a lot of money.
A whole lot.
Yikes.
Yeah, I'm looking through his IMDb too right now and did not do a whole lot.
When the movie ended, when we were watching it in the theater, this dude, we overheard this guy behind us saying, yeah, when I went and saw this in the 90s, he said, we went in thinking it was going to be like Star Wars or something like that. And he's like, and it was not surprise, like Star Wars.
You got to think about that too. Like, it's a different time. You know,
most definitely.
Like, maybe a lot of people weren't like expecting this kind of like horror, the amount of horror that was in.
That's true.
That was involved.
But I mean, like, the tagline is, hang on, I got it. I feel like the tagline is very just like, something bad's gonna happen. It's like ultimate terror, ultimate space. I think I made that up. Oh, infinite space, infinite terror.
Mm. Oh, that makes sense.
I'm not gonna go in expecting a Star War.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Whatever.
I guess it depends on the trailer.
That's true. Trailers can be very misleading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate when they cut shit out of trailers, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes, like, some dope-ass scene in the trailer, like, ooh, oh. You don't see it in the theaters. It's like...
I got the perfect example of that. Do you guys remember...
28 weeks later?
Oh, with Jeremy Renner when he's pushing the car and he, like, winks the camera?
Yeah.
That I'm is also very cool.
Yeah, I feel that. Like I feel like that wink
maybe you
changed the character.
Yeah.
Just him not winking, I'm like, oh, he's a whole different guy now.
Mm-hmm.
That made me so mad.
Yeah. He's so cool. Like I got this guy.
He's like, I know what I'm doing.
And then Sadie just died.
Yeah.
Didn't he get lit on fire too? Like, he pushes the car or whatever. And then you see him like walking. And then some dude just lights him on fire. And he just spins around waving his hands.
Yeah, like, cool. Wait a
like, if you had a wink before that, it'd have been like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, EQ's you did cool, that knowing
like, you know he's going to be burned alive.
I was thinking of the transporter in the trailer. There's a scene where he deflects a missile with a serving tray.
That's badass.
And they took that out of the movie.
Damn.
So, yeah.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
All the CG spent, all the money spent on CG for that?
Maybe he did it in real life. It is Jason Statham.
Yeah, he probably did.
They're like, this is too. He deflected that missile and killed someone.
Yeah.
They had to pull it out.
This is proof.
Out of respect.
This is evidence. Yeah.
Well, just going back to Justin real quick. That's sort of like you were saying, Fernando. Lawrence Fishburne comes and saves the day. You know, he's telling him, fucking go in a ball. But even then, like, Justin's having a rough time. His eyes are just like starting to bleed and, you know, he's out in space for some time and, you know.
Apparently he lives. I mean, they said he's going to live, but we don't see him ever again.
We do. Well, we sort of see him because after he gets saved, they have the conversation like, if we put him into, like, he's still alive, mm-hmm. he's in a rough shape, but if we put him in, like, the cryo sleep, he should be okay. And then at the very end of the movie, like, they say that he was one of the three survivors, yeah. and then I don't think you, like, see his face or anything, but you see, like, one of the tubes.
Yeah, they're like, he's not going to be pretty, but he'll be alive or something.
Yeah, he'll live.
So, well, yeah.
Yeah, but at the very end, we only see, again, Cooper and...
Stark.
Yeah, we only see them two, like, up and about.
So while all this is happening, you know, you can kind of just see they have shots of Dr. Weir. He's slowly starting to kind of, he's losing it a little bit. Miller has some kind of visions too. He sees like a man who's on fire and he's like, fuck, I could feel the heat from that. And then, you know, they start trying to talk to Weir about like, hey, what is going on? And Weir's like trying to give him scientific explanations, but clearly that's bullshit. Again, he's losing his mind as well. DJ at this time has been working on the transmission as well, the one that they initially received. And it turns out that he misheard the Latin. So it didn't say Liberté May, it was Liberté Tutamé, which translates to save yourself, ex infernus, from hell. Whoa.
Yeah, that's ominous. That's not a good turn of events.
Yeah. You think Weir is losing himself? Did Weir have any sights before that? Like,
yeah, he kept seeing his wife.
Oh yeah, he kept seeing his wife, huh? Even when he was fucking,
which was super annoying to me because he kept seeing. I mean, clearly there's reason behind it, but it was still irritating that he was like hallucinating the whole time. And they're like, "Hey, maybe not hallucinating. You get it." And they're like, "Hey, we're seeing crazy shit." And he's like, "Oh, I don't think so."
But I think,
God, you're annoying.
I think that's very human, though.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he was being influenced by the ship and everything.
Yeah, exactly. That too.
I was going to say, like,
God, I want to punch you in the mouth, dude.
You want to avoid ignore, like, the bad signs, kind of right. Like, I'm all right. I'm cool. I'm
it's
cool.
Like, yeah, no, it's cool. I'm just probably overheated. It's good.
Especially because, like, he's clearly been dealing with this from the get go. He feels guilty. We end up learning at some point that his wife killed herself because he was
never around.
He was never around. He was too focused on this one, on making this drive, which. You know, he's trying to come up with just some sort of explanation for these visions now, and they're just getting more and more intense, and he's just fighting back.
Which explains his weird, like, wife shrine. Because yeah. I remember when it first showed it, I was like, whoa, that's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, yeah, he has a photo of his wife or whatever, and then it pans everywhere. Over, and it's like, you have, like, 30 photos of just her face. It's so creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's before the times herself. Of Facebook and Instagram. You know, you can't just go back to Instagram and check them out. You know?
You just have a pile of your wife's face next to your bed. Pervert.
So the Lewis and Clark. Fucking shit, man.
Somebody save me.
So the Lewis and Clark, we learn, is very close to being repaired. Miller is like, all right, everyone, we got to get the fuck out of here. And that's when Dr. Weir is like, oh, no, we are not leaving.
I am home.
Miller says this classic line, fuck this ship.
He says that multiple times. He's always like, fuck this place. Fuck this shit.
Like, there are some great lines in this movie. That. Yeah. So then this is when Weir replies, you can't leave. She won't let you. I am home. And he just disappears into the shadows.
Yeah.
I was like, well, he's gone for good.
Miller sends Peters and Smith to go grab air tanks, and Peters, you know, they're grabbing the air tanks and she sees a hallucination of her son. And I mean, I guess you're going crazy at this point. She ends up following this kid and she follows this hallucination right off the fucking balcony.
Yeah.
She ends up falling like super high up and she breaks all of the bones in her legs.
Yeah.
Like she lands, dies. It's an explosion of water and her legs are just gross,
torn up,
they are broke.
And then her son leans over the edge and he's like, hee hee, or whatever, and he smiles at her. I was like, ugh.
You can still see her breathing too after she hits.
Yeah, it's like worse because, like, oh, she died slow, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Weir ends up returning to the Lewis and Clark.
Somebody say.
Sorry, go ahead.
So this is like when we've learned that Weir has lost his mind completely. He goes back to the Lewis and Clark, and we have, I think it's Smith or the pilot. He sees Weir. He's like, hey, why are you leaving? Turns out it's because Weir has planted some of the bombs that were on the event horizon. on the ship, and he ends up just blowing that ship up.
I gotta say, he's one of my third favorite characters, maybe.
The pilot?
Yeah, he's cool.
He was pretty cool.
He seemed...
Smith, yeah.
Yeah, Smith. Like, his character seemed very grounded and very, like, real.
I like how he's like, I'm not seeing any hallucinations. Yeah. I just think this place is fucking spooky.
Yeah, he's like, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah, let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's just do this shit and go. He's cool. I liked him.
Yeah, I fully agreed with him.
What was up with DJ? Like, why did he fucking put the knife up to his neck like that?
I think maybe that was them trying to show him kind of losing his mind a little bit. Like
DJ?
Yeah, because I feel like they pulled a knife away from him and he looked like, whoa, what the, like something had come over him kind of.
Yeah.
But he was always a little off though.
Yeah.
DJ was always a little off.
That's true. But maybe
it seemed like it was something like maybe prior to that. Like,
oh, I'm sure there was. And this was just kind of pushing him a little bit.
Yeah.
So I kind of forgot to mention, we end up seeing the last log from the Event Horizon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's cool because, you know, it's everyone. They're on the ship. They're like, all right, we're having a great time. Mm-hmm. Here we go. I think there's even a thumbs up. And then kind of goes to black. And then it's fucking crazy shit going on. Like, you see the crew just like eating each other, fucking each other. Screaming,
pulling their eyes out and showing them like,
the guy with the eyes in his hands. Yeah, yeah, that's a classic shot.
Yeah, I read about that, and it was based like the director based that off of a Bosch painting. He's like this Italian Renaissance painter, and he painted this painting called Human Delights or some shit like that.
Let's look that up.
It's called The Garden of Earthly Delights, and it's three panels. And it shows the three panels of human civilization. The first one is the Garden of Eden. The second one is like just everyone enjoying the spoils. And the third one is like complete chaos and murder and fucking like basically what that video footage showed. Like people just eating each other and fucking each other and like all this crazy ass shit.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
It is very cool. I recommend.
So that's what he based those scenes off of, and apparently he filmed that after the movie was filmed.
Really?
Yeah, he filmed it after, and it was just like him and like a small crew with a video camcorder. Apparently he hired a bunch of like porn stars and shit to like film these scenes, because there's like a bunch of like nudity and stuff like that, and like random like, you know, shit like that. So he hired a bunch of porn stars and stuff like that, and he filmed it, and then he showed that to the producers, and they were like, what the fuck? Like, he said something more like throwing up and fainting and shit like that. Like,
Jesus.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I think I remember you mentioning like there is like another cut of this too. Like,
apparently the movie is 130 minutes long. But the studio said that they didn't want it to be that gory, and that's, you know, it's like a high budget film. Like, they thought it should be toned down, and they had him cut it. Like 30 minutes, and it was like in the 90s, I guess. Like, I don't know what the techniques are of like editing film back then, but apparently he had to do it, and he was on a very strict time limit.
Yeah,
like even from the beginning, he was trying to make this like summer.
Oh, it's supposed to be a summer blockbuster, huh?
Yeah, because like some movie got pushed back. It might have been Titanic. I'm not sure, but
97.
Yeah, so he had to fit this time limit, and he cut it, spliced it, like, and it was. Super. That's why I feel like the movie is a little choppy.
Oh, most definitely. It doesn't feel completely complete, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And there was like a lot of gore and stuff like that cut out of the film.
Yeah.
Which Jeff appreciated.
Yeah.
Very much so.
I was going to say, I feel like this movie, it wasn't up until like this last, I don't know, maybe it's like the last half hour or the part that we're in now. Like, there wasn't that much gore. There wasn't that much like killing. Oh,
definitely.
That.
I feel like there's a lot of it that could have been added to it, especially when DJ was being cut up.
Well, speaking of which, let's jump into that right there, because, you know, so Smith is dead. I think that's when it goes to DJ in the medical bay. And that's when Weir appears and he
throws him around like a ragdoll,
a little bit of a fight. And then he picks up a knife, or Weir picks up a knife. You don't see it, but he's cutting him open.
Yeah.
And then the shot after that, it's him being hung up.
Yeah. The captain shows up, Captain Miller.
Yeah. Well, this is death number three. We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
What was death number two?
So the second one was Smith. That was my mistake. So the first was Peters, when she Smith broke all up. Of her legs. Smith gets blown up. And then we have DJ here. He cuts him up and he's just hanging from above with his entrails on a table. and his back is just like, yeah, hung up with.
Also, when Smith blows up, Cooper goes fucking flying.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That doesn't stop him.
Oh, yeah. So he's like floating through space and he's like, whoa, what the fuck?
He's like, why does this shit always happen to me?
And he's like, all right, I'm going to blow my air tank. And then he does it.
He keeps his head cool.
Yep. And then he says, here I come, motherfuckers.
Yeah. Flying like Iron Man.
Again, another fantastic line in this movie. Great. This movie has great fucking quotes in it. So Miller, you know, everyone's dying around him. He is now just going after Weir. At a certain point, you know, Weir ends up knocking out Stark, who, I mean, I'm kind of surprised Weir didn't just kill her, but maybe he was like trying to lure Miller kind of into this room. And we have a very cool chair reveal where he turns around, you know, and he doesn't have his eyes.
Yeah. Fishburne reaches over and his like nail gun thing is gone. And somehow the dude with no eyes, it was perfectly silent, came over and took the nail gun from like under them. And then got back into the chair and like swiveled around and waited. And then and then as soon as he was like, wait a second, the nail gun's gone, he slowly turned around. And he's like looking for this or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, bullshit.
I think that was one of my biggest disappointments of that film. I wanted to see that nail gun in action. I wanted to see it pin fucking Dr. Grant to the wall.
Pin his hand up against the wall.
Yeah, something. Especially because, like, I'm a big fan of Dead Space, and this movie...
Oh, it is so Dead Space.
Greatly inspired Dead Space.
Yeah.
And in that game, you get that nail gun.
You get nail guns, you get, like, a saw gun that shoots out and, like, take off people's limbs.
Like, when I first saw Cooper using the nail gun on the space station outside, I was like, oh, fucking, that's from fucking Dead Space.
Chekhov's
like,
nail gun right there, and they let us down.
That was one of my favorite guns in that game.
Yeah.
But that laser gun, though...
That's where it's
can't
at.
Can't beat it. Yeah. Can't beat that.
So Weir reveals his plan that he is activating the gravity drive and he's taking them all back to wherever this ship has come from. Weir ends up kind of firing the gun at Miller, misses completely, and shoots the glass right into space.
Okay, so didn't he just shoot Cooper?
No, he tried to shoot Cooper.
Oh, yeah. So Cooper,
because Cooper comes flows.
Yeah. I can't stop.
He hits the windshield.
Yep.
So I misread because I thought Cooper hits the windshield and Weir just like shoots it because he's like, oh, if you miss, you'll pierce the hole. And he's like, what makes you think I'll miss or whatever? And then he shoots straight at the fucking window and blows it out.
Yep.
I was like, dude. He's outside.
He missed.
He's gonna die out there. That whole scene, I feel like he was just losing it.
Overreacted. Yeah.
No eyballs. He's probably
no
just,
eyeballs.
Just,
yeah.
He's just he gonna do winging he's it right like, there. He's like, oh shit. I like that he stays sitting in the chair too, and it gets blown off, and he's just like fucking
he's just in the chair.
So then, Weir gets blown out into space. Miller manages to avoid getting blown out into space, and him and Stark both manage to escape. They're running their ass off. They go by an airlock, and there's some banging, and they're like, oh, God, it's got to be Weir. Turns out it's not. It's Cooper.
Don't shoot. Don't hurt Weir. What do you say? Something like that. Again, Cooper.
Cooper A1. Has thankfully made it back all alive, and we have... our remaining team members, or so we think. So
Fishburne, Cooper,
Stark, and then also Justin in
cryo.
Yeah. So the three of them come up with the plan to use the explosives that are in the ship to separate the front from the hull. Now they're doing this because the engine, the gravity drive, is in the back part of the ship, and they'll thankfully have enough air to survive. So Lawrence Fishburne Miller ends up making sure all of that is working out. So Cooper and Stark go back into the main part of the ship, and that's when some weird shit starts happening too. Like you're kind of saying, the haunted house feel with blood dripping down the walls, and like that fucking huge ass tube of blood explodes, which is literally straight out of The Shining.
You think that was like a desperate attempt of the ship trying to like...
Absolutely. It's like trying to
get them to stay.
Push them even more.
Get them to,
Or just like, not focus on setting off these explosions and, doing all of the launching shit. This is when we have Miller. He makes it to the engine room because, well, Weir appears, but he's got his eyes back now. And he's also, this reminded me a lot of Hellraiser.
They're closed, right?
When?
No, they're open.
Weir appears, they're open?
He has like,
sorry. So you're saying Weir comes back and he has his eyes.
Yeah, he has like the fucking weird markings on his face and everything.
He has really dark circles under his eyes.
It's very Hellraiser.
Like, that's weird that he has his eyes. In the gravity chamber or whatever, the gravity drive.
Oh, that's right.
And he shows up looking like you're just about to say, or just like,
oh, yeah, the Burning Man.
Looks like,
he gets shot out into space and he says the ship brings him back.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah, he's like, And he looks like a Hellraiser. Yeah, Hellraiser guy.
He looks like a Hellraiser
very
guy.
Very much like. I'm looking at the pinhead on his shirt.
Yeah, he looks like Pinhead.
Yeah, without the pins.
Yeah, basically.
So Weir and Miller are now just battling it out. They're punching each other in the engineering room or in the gravity room, and everything is on fire. I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought that was pretty cool, too. Apparently caused a fire on set.
Shit.
That almost burned one of the sets.
I believe it.
Like that scene, I guess the set where it has like where he's running through, you know, the thing that's connecting the ship to the back.
Meat grinder, right? I think it might have been
the meat grinder, actually. Mm. But I think it like almost caused a fire on set.
I believe it. That room was on fire.
Yeah.
I liked the gravity drive like spinning on fire.
That was very cool. Yeah.
There's a lot of really cool imagery in that. There's really cool imagery. I give Paul W. Anderson or whoever the cinematographer was credit for that, because like even in the beginning shots, like when it shows Neptune and then like it shows one of its moon eclipse it. Man, that's really cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
I feel like you know, sometimes cinematographers don't like get the credit they're due, especially in a movie like this that maybe not as many people have seen, which is
many people spent money on.
Exactly.
Like, it's all about money, fucking. Like, everyone wants to fuck money.
That's all. It's all about money, fucking. It's true.
But like, you know, at least this has now become a cult classic, kind of like with The Thing. That movie was called one of the worst movies ever. It did terrible at the box office, but now I think it's one of the best movies of all time.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing too. This movie, so it was it did poorly in the box office, but it did gain a big cult following.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the producers was like, notice that, and he told the director, he's like, hey, I want to see the director's cut of this film. He's like, I want to see this film in its entirety. So he commissioned him to like, you know, go and make the film. But apparently, like, a lot of this film was on tape and in random ass locations. Like, apparently he had trouble tracking it down. He had to go to like a fucking
warehouse or something.
Yeah, a warehouse, like a fucking mine to try to find these like videotapes. And he just couldn't find it. He says he thinks there's like a videotape somewhere out there that has his version.
And it's literally just like one videotape, there, right?
But
that has like the final thing on it.
I don't know.
Lost the time.
Hopefully we find that eventually.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool to see that. I think there's a lot of big opportunity that was missed in this film. Psychologically and visually, horribly, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's some cool, like that scene with DJ got cut up. Like, apparently his entrails were like hanging from his body.
That would have been
Jeff
cool
would
to
love
see.
To see that.
Oh, like, definitely.
So hopefully that film shows up.
Yeah. For me. For my benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Miller has the detonator for all of the explosives kind of to separate the ship. He's now essentially cut off. The timer is literally about to go off to send them into this fucking hell dimension. And he makes a sacrifice by setting off the explosion. And Weir is very upset. He's like, no. Thankfully, you know, he's able to separate the front of the ship from the back. And we see the back of the event horizon disappear into a black hole. Into wherever it had been.
Yeah, so I was a little curious about that. So the event horizon like disappears to a black hole into Neptune, or is that the name of that planet?
I believe it was Neptune.
Yeah.
I don't think it like goes into Neptune. You know, I think like
it that's looks its, like it though, right?
Well, kind of, but you know, that's as you know, Weir was kind of explaining. At a certain point, parts of the universe have to fold, and it goes from one side to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they just couldn't visually show it, but that's kind of what I imagine, that wormhole is just dimension crossing or something.
Could be. Mm-hmm. Could be.
Yeah.
It looks like it was to a planet.
Yeah.
It looks like eventually like the planet kind of covers it up too.
Right.
But that's what I was wondering. When I first saw that, I was like, is this planet going to become a black hole? And is this black hole going to suck up the solar system? Like, what's going on?
And the whole solar system goes into this hell world.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That'd have been cool.
Would have been pretty cool. So, unfortunately, that ends up killing Miller, but he sacrificed himself to save the rest. Cooper, Stark, they go into the cryosleep again, and Justin is already there. 72 days later, they're discovered, but not before Stark has another last vision of Weir. But thankfully, it was just a dream, and they end up getting rescued. And we literally get the title card, The End.
Yeah, The End.
Or was it a hallucination or a dream?
That's true. Because
the front part of the ship could have maintained some of the
possession.
Possession.
Well, she did read the readings, it was all over the ship.
Right.
Uh-huh. And kind of, I feel like the doors closed ominously. I don't know if maybe that was like their way of kind of ending the movie. Or maybe that was it kind of.
Because, like, you're safe now. We'll get you out of here. And then the thing just like.
Someone give me whatever the fuck was he asking for. Yeah,
give me a
thing.
Yeah, I don't know. He's yelling it over and over. I was like, is this supposed to mean something? And then it closed.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool. Just that ending. I'm like, ooh, maybe there's more
of this. End question mark?
Nope, no question mark.
Still affected by that shit.
I was going to say we got some dope ass 90s music.
Prodigy, baby.
Yeah.
Prodigy. Prodigy's classic. I remember the first time I heard Prodigy. It's a quick Fernando fact. It was after watching Iron Man. I was watching with Eric. I was hanging out with Eric Johnson. Mm. And he put on Prodigy. I was like, this is dope. We're high as fuck.
This has been a Fernando fact.
All right. Well, that ends our movie. Just real quick, this is the part I like to call Facts in Space.
Fun facts.
Welcome to Fun Facts.
Do I have any facts? Do you have any more facts?
So
I think, no, you got most of the shit that I have.
So, yeah, like, since the film was like on a very tight limit, like filming wise, they had to find a crew that could assemble a set like super fast. I don't know. I'm just going back to the sets because I thought the sets were fucking dope.
They're really good.
They're very
cool.
And
apparently they were assembled super quick by some like low class lending. I mean, not low class. I don't want to say that because they did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't use WIDA. I mean, ILM.
Oh.
They couldn't, like, there's like a lot of films crews that they could have used. But since they were in such a tight, like,
schedule, filming kind of,
they had
budget.
To use some sort of like London crew that like got the shit ready to go.
Kind of just fast. Do it,
and they fucking did a great job. Like that scene where he's like crawling around that like the engine thing. That scene was cool. All the green.
Yeah. When he was investigating,
that scene was cool.
He just kept going deeper and deeper. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is tight.
Yeah. And then he pulled out a fucking like little circuit board and like fix some shit real quick.
Yeah, there's like a lot of interesting detail that was put in that I don't think I like really noticed.
A lot of the sets were very detailed, very like very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. I was very impressed by the production of the film.
So here's a fun fact.
I guess it's for $60 million, right?
Yeah, that's true. So here's a fun fact, kind of going back to what you were saying, Fern. So having just done a PG-13 movie, Mortal Kombat, Paul W.S. Anderson was keen to do something more mature and gruesome, and this is why he turned down the chance to direct X-Men. Which is kind of a bummer because then his original gruesome, gory idea ends up just getting scrapped anyways.
Well, it was still pretty gruesome and gory.
True.
Like, even Jeff was, like, appalled by it.
I'm not into, like, body horror movies. So it's like, oh, man, if only they had a longer version of him getting his entrails ripped out. And I'm like, why? I don't know. I just don't care. I do like practical effects, but I'm not, like... You know,
sometimes I forget that too. You know, like, I'm a fan of the horror and the practical effects, and I was like, I forget. Like, some people don't want to see that shit.
and like Jeff, when you put it like that, I'm like, yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
another fun fact: the initial cut of this received the NC-17 again, probably because of all of those.
Apparently, it's called a kiss of death by the movie rating company.
Yeah, theater like. Mainstream theaters don't screen NC-17, do they?
Probably not.
I've never seen.
Yeah,
I've never seen an NC-17 movie.
I'm sure, like, anywhere
that I know of. Yeah, that's true. Are those even rated now? I mean,
I guess definitely not X. Nowadays. They're just X films, right?
Mm-hmm. Even then, I don't I think they don't send them to the MPAA anymore. I don't think they're just like, this is porn.
I've been hearing
straight
that
downloaded porn,
like boop.
Right. But that film, the Marilyn Monroe film that Anna de Armas is in for Netflix, I believe that's an NC-17.
Whoa, we're watching that on the big screen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like there's like some really intense shit. And she's like, don't cut it. I want it in. And I guess they're going to be releasing it soon.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Gives me props to her.
Well, to wrap up the film here, Fern, I always like to go over, you know, favorite kills or favorite deaths. I know like a lot didn't really happen during this movie until probably like the last half an hour or so, but out of the, maybe it was three or four, one, two, three, four, I guess four deaths that we got, technically five. Do you have a favorite one?
Yeah. I want to say is when, the mom, what's her name?
That is going to be Peters.
Peters. When she falls, like when she hits that, like chain, that like
the grate,
that grate, like, yeah. Breaks all her bones and shit. Like, that's brutal. Like, that's the most brutal scene, I think, in the movie.
Oh, most definitely. What about you, Jeff? Do you have a favorite death and or kill?
Yeah, I think my favorite death is... the pilot. I feel like that was the most, like, emotional death.
Yeah.
It was the most, like you were saying before, he was, like, really relatable character. And he's like looking for the bomb on the ship. And then he realizes he knows he's going to die also more than the other characters. He just looks at it and he's like, all right.
Yeah, he
and he has to accept it. And then he fucking explodes. I was like, damn.
Especially because he pulls off the front and you see the timer. Yeah. It's like four.
It's three, like, what are you going to do in 3 seconds?
And he's just like, fuck.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was so, they were so close to leaving too. Something about that. I was like, oof, that's rough.
Yeah, that's good.
My favorite one was going to be DJ. Just because it was the most gory, I'd say. I mean, the Peter's falling off of the, breaking all of her legs. That one was pretty brutal, but I just like the DJ one. It was, again, I'm always going to go back to Hellraiser with this movie, how like so many similarities they are. This one is very reminiscent of that.
Is it because your mind is sick and twisted?
Fucked up.
I may or may not be affected by the event horizon. Well, this is the part where I now ask you both, did you guys like the movie? Fernando, as the guest here?
Yeah, I enjoyed the film. I mean, I feel like there's like a missed opportunity. A lot was missed out. I would love to see that director's cut.
Well, most definitely.
But overall, I'd probably give it like 3 out of 5.
Ooh, actually, I have a rating system.
Oh.
So?
I retract that statement then.
Out of 10 eyeballs in your hand, how many eyeballs would you give this movie?
Let's see. I could only hold about 6 of them.
6 eyeballs out of 10 eyeballs.
Yes.
Perfect. All right. Now we're going to go to you, Jeff. Did you like this movie?
I'm going to say that it was okay.
All right.
It was pretty good.
Cool.
There were some scenes where I was on the edge of my seat a couple times. And I liked the characters were believable. Like I mentioned before, all the like hell evil stuff just seemed a little bit almost like simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they went a different direction, I think it could have been really cool and like said something about different dimensions. And instead it was just like, we found an evil one. Mm-hmm. Whoa, spikes and eyeballs. And I was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah,
it was pretty good. Awesome. It was fun to watch in theaters for sure.
Well, then, out of 10 eyeballs in your hand, how many eyeballs would you give this movie?
I'd give it 4 eyeballs.
This is D.
you gave it 6, so that's like a C.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say so.
Okay. Yeah, I'd give it 4.5 eyeballs. 4 eyeballs and a squished in half eyeball in my hand.
Mm, very cool. All right. Well, I really like this movie. I guess I shouldn't say really. I like this movie. I'm probably going to agree with you, Fernando, when it comes to the eyeball rating. I give this 6 out of 10 eyeballs. Like you were saying, there's missed potential, but I love the space horror element to it. I love that it kind of has helped spawn Dead Space, which is such a great game. I love just the whole, you know, people losing their mind in a hell dimension opening up because of a device that was supposed to be used to make, you know, just everyday life easier. You know, you want to go from one side of the universe to the other without having to spend so many days in cryo. Nope, you're going to go through a hell dimension instead.
Well, that's what you get when you fuck with physics.
That's true. That's very what, true.
The pilot said, what's his name?
Smith. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Albert Einstein said those exact words as well.
Oh, really?
Yep. Quote for quote, word for word.
That's great. Another quick thing, just to go back, I would throw an extra eyeball in there. Just for set production, because those sets were fucking great.
That's fair.
Those sets were so cool. Like, whoever's watching that movie again, like, yeah, it's some
pay attention to those.
Yeah, sets. Appreciation. Even like, you know, like their sleeping pods. It has their name and number and shit like that. Like, mm-hmm. And apparently, like their badge, they're like the flags that they have.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What's his name?
Sam
Weir, Dr. Weir.
Yeah.
He has an Australian flag and it has like some part of it that's changed or something like that.
Because it's supposed to represent the future, right?
It represents the future. Flag like, could possibly look like. So the flag changes and shit like that. So like it seemed like they paid a lot of attention to detail and I give him props for that. So I'll give him seven of them juicy eyeballs.
Seven juicy eyeballs, your final answer.
Yeah.
Well, I believe that's going to wrap up today's episode. Jeff, thank you for slowly becoming my co-host.
Hey, thanks for having me back again for the fourth time.
He's molding you.
People can find you and your amazing art at
jeffersonmiller.com or on Instagram at @artofjefferson.
And Fernando, you are an artist and a toy designer. That's actually one of the reasons why you're moving is because you got a job in designing toys, but you also do some great artwork and you also design shoes.
So my art Instagram account is furbot14. You can check out my shoes there. And if you want like commissions and shit like that, I'll do that. But I'm about to become a toy designer for Jazzwares. I'm going to be doing Coco Melon. Ding, 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 ding. Coco Melon. So if you want, like, you know, your babies to have cool toys, buy some Coco Melon toys because they'll be designed by yours truly.
Alrighty, everyone. Well, thank you again for joining us for episode 4 of Hurwitz's House of Horror. And as we say at the end of every episode here,
space. Spooky space.
Scary.
It's a me, Mario. I goes down the pipe and I get the coins.